Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Timewalk Sacks. Uh-oh. Ethan, is that your... I was trying to think of what your favorite card to pack one, pick one from the Vintage Cube, which is going to be on Arena now, if you haven't heard the news. Powered Cube coming to Arena. What's your favorite pack one, pick one of the Power 9? Is it Lotus? Is it Timewalk?
Ooh. That is a really good question. I guess it's Timewalk. Lotus, when I was thinking it was Time Walk, but then you said Lotus, and I was like, ooh, Lotus.
Lotus is pretty fun.
Because Lotus is fun with Lurrus, and is just, you know, sometimes Time Walk doesn't, like, put a feeling of dread. Like, a turn two Time Walk, you're like, you just cast Explore.
Right.
Deal. Turn one Lotus is scary.
It strikes fear into the heart of the enemy, for sure.
So maybe Lotus. How about you?
It's Lotus for me, I think. I've watched too many LSV videos for it to not be Lotus. I think Timewalk would be a close second. I think it would go, for me, it would go Lotus, Timewalk, Ancestral, Sol Ring, Moxen.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I may be the Moxen ahead of Sol Ring. I have the worst Sol Ring decks. Like, if I get to draft Sol Ring, it's always like pack two after I've started drafting my white-black disruption deck, and it is always just atrocious in my decks.
Yeah, I hear that for sure. I don't know. I played against an opponent today. I lied to you, by the way. Well, I didn't lie to you, but the Vintage Cube is back. It was gone.
Oh, I know, baby. Drafted it in my hotel room at BOA.
Okay, good. Cool. Because I think they were toying with doing, they were going to do like
Supreme Drafts.
And then I guess people revolted and they were like, all right, just kidding. We'll bring Vintage Cube back.
I thought
again.
It didn't work. I thought there was an issue.
Okay. Maybe that was it. I didn't stay up to date on the MTGO Discord discourse. But my opponent today went turn one land, mana vault, 3-mana Tezzeret, untap mana vault.
Ooh.
I was like,
Lotus Lurrus.
Say less. I just want to do that now. Because I already have a fondness for the 3-mana Tezzeret, colorless walker from EOE, but doesn't seem like it's that good. But that definitely seemed pretty good for my opponent today. But yes, if you have not heard the news, as Ben said, Powered Cube, we should not call it Vintage Cube, we should call it Powered Cube, is coming to Magic Arena, but it will be functionally, it's pretty darn close, and we'll talk about just how close it is to the Vintage Cube on Magic Online. There was a really, like, this announcement, I mean, obviously this was in the hopper for them for a long time, but, you know, they announced it on Monday, and then on Wednesday we got the drop of Paul Chian and LSV doing their videos, then with some tricklings later in the week from Reed Duke and Arna Hushenbeth and Mengu dropping their videos on their channels. We finally got the full list. It's been a very cool week. And there was like a huge announcement about competitive limited play for 2026 and 2027 that I'm feeling like I went from feeling pretty down
about limited as an entity.
The state of limited and like the state of limited content in the wake of the state of limited and wondering like what was going on to just being like, we're back. Like we are eating good in the neighborhood as limited podcasters today.
Yeah. They announced a 500K prize pool tournament that it's basically a limited pro tour that's going to be happening in 2027. You're going to qualify during 2026. And I just assume you and I will qualify and be participating in this tournament. And if we don't, I assume that they will invite us to commentate because we are excellent at limited.
Everything I didn't think, I was like, you're making me feel bad. Now I feel worse. And now I feel really worse. Like every part of that sentiment had me feeling more and more depressed. I will be trying to qualify. I will say that.
Yes, me too.
Much. Like, yeah, and sure. There are quite a few ways to qualify. So yeah, Ben mentioned this is basically, they're calling it the Magic Limited Championship, but it sounds like it's effectively going to be a limited pro tour. A number of ways to qualify. One of them is going to be, it'd be very cool to see these people. The top, they're going to calculate the pro tour draft results and pick the top 16 drafters from the pro tours of 2026. Who are going to get just automatic entries. But for us plebs, there's going to be four ways to qualify. Honestly, one of the ones I'm most excited about is some of these, they're calling them LTQs, the limited qualifiers, these limited tournament qualifiers.
It was so funny. I was listening to LR and Marshall was like going through, why isn't it LCQ, which they can't do because that's last chance qualifier. But
right.
Marshall and LSV are too highbrow. They've never experienced the last chance qualifier.
That's on so Sunday.
It's just LTQ, like LT for limited.
Yes. So, but some of them, as the article made it seem, like some of them are going to be replacing RCQs. So regional championship qualifiers will be replaced with these just LTQs, which means you skip over that. Like one of the reasons I hate the RCQs is I'm like, well, I get to play an RCQ that is limited that qualifies me for a regional championship, which is only constructed. And then if I do well at that, then I could go and play in a pro tour where I get to play limited. No. This passes over that and you can just play in the LTQ, and that qualifies you for this tournament.
So am I understanding right in that, like, the RCQs, the regional championships, like, or the RCs, the regional championships, right? Like, uh-huh. So you do the qualifiers for the tournament. We just get to show up to the regional championships that already exist, and there will be this LTQ there for us to participate in, or are they going to be separate tournaments from the regional championships?
Okay, so I think there's two things. I could be wrong, and so apologies if I am. But as I understood it from the article, some things that LGSs run that are RCQs will be replaced by LTQs. So there will just be one shot ways to qualify for this tournament. The other thing that is happening is
a local store.
I think so. I think the article said it could be
like a 50-person tournament to get a slot in this thing.
Okay. Let me find this in the article so that I'm not talking out of my butt.
No. Limited championships qualifiers held at regional championships.
Okay. This says, the article says, limited championship qualifiers may, in some regions, replace existing open events that award regional championship invitations and prize money.
Where are you?
In these cases, in the middle of the article, how can I qualify for the Magic Limited Championship? The second paragraph. In these cases, the regional championship invitations and prize money will remain in place on top of the limited championship invitation awards. So it's unclear where those are going to happen. Like, what scale do they need to be for them to, like, you know, maybe not in. I'm not saying that I think you're like podunk RCQ that only has 10 people show up is going to suddenly be a way for you to qualify for this, but it does say they will replace some RCQs. The other thing that is going to happen is to your point about them being at regional championships is that SCG has said that at every one of their events next year, whether it be a spotlight series or a regional championship, will have tournaments to qualify into this. There's going to be events there. There's also going to be events at Magic Cons next year where you can qualify for, which I assume will replace the PTQs, but maybe they'll run alongside them. Who knows? And there'll also be some on Magic Arena as well. So we're going to have a good amount of ways to qualify for these. I mean, it's still going to be hard. Like, I think they're all one slotters. Like, so you got to get a good sealed pool, run well in sealed, do well in the top eight draft, which is the format that these tournaments will take place. But that's really exciting.
Yeah, super awesome news. I will be jamming as many of these as I can possibly fit into my schedule. Feeling great about the decision to have locked in MagicCon Vegas. I'm also planning to go to, made steps to go to Atlanta again next year.
So oh, nice.
I'm going to be giving it the good old college try. I also think it's not crazy for us to, if this is going to be a thing, like if we're ever going to get to do coverage, I don't think it's crazy for us to reach out again and ask about doing coverage. The worst they can say is no.
I think they will. I think the worst they can do is not reply, and that's what I expect to happen. But,
but
you know,
that's fine.
I don't know.
You gotta shoot a shot.
Well, sure. Maybe we talk about it on Lords Unlimited, my current feeling about that, but that's for another day. There is some slightly smaller limited news, but still exciting limited news nonetheless, which is that Nerd Rage Gaming, NRG, is bringing their series to Magic Online, and there is going to be, it's 2 weeks from now, 2 weeks from us recording it, so November 9th, Sunday, they're going to be doing an Edge of Eternity's sealed tournament that qualifies for their NRG series, which is very, very cool. It's a $25 sealed tournament. It's got a prize pool, it's cash, but then also, yeah, one person qualifies or the winner qualifies for their you know, end of year tournament. And then I believe the winner of that tournament gets a Pro Tour spot. So not nothing there. And we'd just love to see this crossover is really, really cool. It seems like it's a long time coming, and I'm glad that they worked that out. And we'll have links to that sign up and the announcement of the Magic Limited Championship for 2027 in our show notes, so you can learn more about that as well.
Well, and we've got even more exciting news there. So Mark Mason, who has had a big hand in organizing this event, reached out to us on Twitter to get us free entry into this tournament, just as like, thanks for the podcast, etc. And neither of us can participate. And so I messaged him back and I was like, hey, we can't, but we want to shout this out to try to get the tournament full for you all. Can we get some free codes for our listeners? And he rose to the occasion. So we've got 5 codes to give away to listeners as well.
Whoa. Have you thought, this is the first I'm hearing of this. Have you thought about how you're going to dole those out?
I have not.
Okay, great. Well,
he said some codes in the Discord and a couple as quote listener engagement. So maybe we could run a thing on Blue Sky, and maybe we could run a thing in the Discord where people, like maybe in the tournament meetup or whatever, I just post how we want to do this or are interested in the codes. It needs to be somebody who is MTGO comfortable, right? Like, you don't want to be entering this tournament if you don't know how to play MTGO. But if you do and you're interested in the tournament, we've got some codes to give away.
Maybe we'll drop one as a pinned comment in YouTube as well. So that
those
first viewers up on YouTube can fight over it there. So that's very exciting. So thank you, Mark. That's really, really sweet news. So yeah, look out for those. We'll maybe do a couple, as Ben said, a couple in Discord, and then for our patrons, and then a few dropped around the social medias and on YouTube. Speaking of our Patreon, being a patron might get you access to many great things, and one of them could be free entry into the Nerd Rage Gaming tournament on Magic Online. So we want to shout that out. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show. And we have a lot of great perks, including some sweet behind the scenes tournament entry potentially. But the two things we usually want to shout out from our Patreon are access to our Discord and access to our podcast feed, where you get not only this episode a day early ad free, but you also get our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. We're coming up on a year of Lords Unlimited, Ben, which is pretty exciting. We're rounding, I believe this will be episode 50. I mean, we've skipped a few weeks there, but mostly hit every week. So coming up on a year with that, which is exciting. I think we both really enjoy that. And I know our listeners that take part in that, that's one of my favorite channels to check in on, is folks responding to that when the episode drops Thursday mornings, hearing them talk about whatever we're talking about, whether it's, you know, TV or movie recommendations, or us talking about Survivor, or the picks that we're making in a draft log review that we're talking about. That's really fun to get to see with our most invested listeners. So if that sounds of interest to you, or you just want to peep on over at the Patreon, check it out. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Jake and Brian. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, truly cannot say thank you enough to all of our patrons and all of our listeners.
And can't say thank you enough to Powered Cube coming to Arena.
Holy cow. This is great news. I'm a little worried in that I wonder what it's going to be like. First of all, this is amazing news. I mean, there's so much good news to talk about. I don't know if we properly expressed how excited we are about the limited tournament, or me especially. Like, that is huge news. And we're going to be jamming that, and we'll be keeping you up to date on all of those tournaments as we go through the year for the qualifying.
And more so than what I want to do with an email to being like, hey, could we do coverage, is I want to be like, how did you decide to do this? I like, you could have asked me.
It has to be Huey, right? It has to be William Huey Jensen spearheading.
Well, but I agree with that. I mean, certain, like, just by proxy of that being his job, is he's the head of, you know,
organized play.
But I guess I just more so mean like, where are they getting the, hey, there's an appetite for this, numbers? And what numbers do they need to see to be like, yes, we want to do more of this? Because it's not like they're announcing, this is the thing we're doing moving forward. They're announcing,
it's this year,
this is the thing we're doing in 2027, which makes me think like it's got some, I don't know, it's auditioning for something, for the big stage.
For sure, which means limited community. Show ergo, up. Listeners, if you're listening to this, you need to show Watsy like, this matters to you. Like, we need to be going out to these tournaments in droves is the word, not in groves.
Droves, not droves. Groves, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We need to be going out to these tournaments in droves. We need to be making them cap the entries to these tournaments. Like, whatever we can do, you know, the whole vote with your wallet, don't buy Spider-Man thing. Like, that's one form. But, like, even more importantly for limited players is proactively voting with your money and your time and your investment and your energy and showing up to these tournaments and making sure Wizards hears loud and clear from the limited community that we love this and we want to see more of it.
Yes, I agree with that. I mean, and I think, gosh, should we set the goal? One of us has to make it.
One of us has to make it.
Is that the goal?
It depends on when the tournaments are, man. Like, so many of my Saturdays are blacked out.
You went from we'll be playing in the tournament. You went from that to I don't know, man, pretty quickly.
I mean, so realistically,
sure.
I'm sure this will be the most in-demand tournament, like from the pro community and from the limited community. This will be the most in-demand tournament ever. Is that crazy to say?
I would think so.
Like the last limited only PT was in what, 2007, I think, with the Finkel one, maybe? Is that right?
I don't know.
It's a long time ago. And since then, Magic has grown a ton. Like, I don't think it is unreasonable to claim that this will be the most in-demand tournament slots ever. I don't think that's crazy to think about. If this is Pro Tour equivalent, I think the pros will be very interested in a limited only tournament, and the limited community is going to be fired up about it.
And we have to assume that it will be all draft, right? They're not going to do sealed in this limited championship series or this limited championship tournament. It's going to be all draft, which is so sick. Yeah, it's very, very cool. Okay, the other thing that is very sick is Powered Cube is coming to Arena. So they have effectively put Vintage Cube on Arena with about a difference of 100-ish cards. I know you said you did the Cube Cobra comparison of what's going to be in, what's out. So you have a really good sense of like the differences here.
Correct. Yeah, there's 434 cards that overlap from both cubes. There's 106 cards different, 540 cube.
Okay, so this, I guess, how do we want to approach this episode? Who is our target audience for listening to this?
I think our target audience to start with, I thought about this because I think we need to, I don't think we can start from level zero. Like, that's not our show. I think initially for like about the next 15 minutes or something, our target audience is going to be people who have Vintage Cubed. And I think if you are not that person, you should hang along for the ride. And I think before we do anything else, we should stop and do a sales pitch. Because there's going to be whatever percentage of our audience, like has to be probably at least 50% or more, have never Vintage Cubed or have never cubed maybe. This is the time. Like if you've ever been on the fence about like, well, I don't know about Cube, or maybe you've done the Arena Cubes, but you've never done Vintage Cube because it's a lot of older cards, right? Like this is a whole nother ball game from Arena Cubing or from Tinkerer's Cubing or from Chromatic Cubing or whatever. Now is the time to get on, and it is so worth it. And yes, there's going to be growing pains. Like there, you are going to lose some gems. Like there was a time in both of our lives where, and the payout structure is worse than this, and I think we should acknowledge that. There was a time in both of our lives where both you and I were just scrapping to 2-1 on MTGO, because on MTGO, if you 2-1 your cube draft, you could draft again for free. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case here. Like if you 2-1, you're going to be out $5, or if you 4-3, you're going to be out 100 gems. Like the prize payouts are the same as for any other premier draft format, even though they are Phantom, which sign me up. Like, but I get that that is not okay for everyone as well. Like that's not everyone is in the same financial place as me where they can just basically draft however much they want. But if you're somebody who has to scrap together gems or has to scrap together coins and do your daily quests, I still think this is worth it for you to try to figure out, because it is such a deep format and it is such a core part of the limited experience. I think if you think of yourself as somebody who loves limited, I think adding Vintage Cube to your repertoire, if it is not already there, will be worth the pain to your gems and grinding through your daily gold quests and having to wait, you know, half a week potentially to do another cube draft, because you're going to lose a lot in the beginning. I think there is no way around that. Like you just are. There's growing pains. And I specifically remember being in whatever, the end of high school, beginning of college, and like hitting that time where you owe three, and like I would put on $8 at a time, like in tickets to MTGO, and then like stinks. And then I really needed a 2-1, and you feel great when you 2-1. You got to draft again, and then you'd 1-2, and you put another $5 on MTGO or whatever. Like, and I did it piecemeal at a time like that, so that it hurt. Like, so that I knew how much money I was spending.
Yeah.
Cube drafting. But I think you should. I don't know how else to convince you other than to tell you that it is amazing, and I think it is worth the pain to your gems or to your coins or grinding through to draft to try to learn this format. So don't just skip out on Vintage Cube. It being on Arena is the time to get on board.
It's really fun. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that can't be overstated, really, just how, like, Vintage Cube lets you play Limited in, I don't know, it presses up against your heuristics and defaults. It makes you assess deck building in a different way. It makes you better at drafting with a plan and drafting around cards and seeing how synergies work. It's just going to make you a much better drafter, full stop, if you engage with it in a, like, spiky way. And it's really fun. Like, so I feel like, because I want to, like, balance that out with you being like, you should do it. It's going to cost a lot of money and you're going to lose a lot. Is like, it's true.
Not the best sales pitch.
But it's not a great sales pitch, I think, for people who might be cube curious. So, but yeah, would really encourage you to do it as well. And I would, I don't know, maybe they'll just keep it. I don't love cube being a ranked format personally. But that's neither here nor there. But and perhaps in future iterations they may decide to mess with the pricing or the prize structure or entry fees based on it being Phantom, because I do think it's a little steep. But that aside, I think it's just going to be really fun.
I think, and you should also feel like there's going to be FOMO, because everyone who is anyone is going to be vintage cubing, and you want to be in those people who are vintage cubing. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. October 10th is World Mental Health Day, and this year we're saying thank you, therapists.
I am really happy to have an opportunity to talk about the positive impact that therapy has had on my life. I started out with the goal of trying to better navigate my relationship and frustrations with my parents, but as a result, I've expanded my view to so many more relationships, exploring how I can be a better father, partner, and friend. And I am also often humbled by how slow of a process it all is.
BetterHelp therapists have helped over 5 million people worldwide on their mental health journeys and has over 12 years' experience in matching people to the right therapist. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences and matches you with someone suited to your therapy goals.
This World Mental Health Day, we're celebrating the therapists who have helped millions of people take a step forward. If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start that journey.
Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/lords. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. So, yes, that's our pitch. And I think the next 15 minutes or so are not for you if you are new to Vintage Cube. And then I think more of the episode will be after that. But I think just to go over, for somebody who has vintage cubed or who has been vintage cubing on MTGO, what to expect from this. And I think largely, just broadly, you should expect a vintage cube or like the vintage cube. There are not cards that feel out of place from a vintage cube experience, even the 100 cards that are different. So headlining things, there's no alchemy cards at all. Big win. Two big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I think I honestly hope that they can figure out a way to salvage the Arena Cube as it currently stands. But also, they may just not ever return to it. Like, they may, like, there's a world where the Power Cube is very popular, and as I imagine it will be, and that's just what they decide the cube offering will be from here on out. You know, they haven't returned to Tinkerer's Cube in some time. They haven't returned to Chromatic Cube in some time. So it's unclear to me what Arena's cube life will be moving forward. But the alchemy density, or existence really, in cube has felt not great on Arena, because oftentimes it's just correct to take, like, for a long time I was just like, you just, if your pack has an MH3 card or an alchemy card in it, you take that. If not, take a land. And if not, it doesn't matter, was sort of like how you approached Arena Cube. And I was really nervous that alchemy cards would be in the Power Cube, and I'm thrilled that they are not.
Yeah. Also, no Universes Beyond for licensing reasons. So what that means for experienced cubers, there's no Orcish Bowmasters, there's no One Ring, none of the Land Cycler cycle from Lord of the Rings, and no, sadly for you, Vivi or Nitya.
That is sad for me. So yeah, no Lorien Revealed or what's it called? The Troll
of Khazad-dûm.
Yeah.
Okay. That sort of stuff. Right. There's also no Monarch. So there's no Palace Jailer, no Fourth Year Lingus, which is also Universes Beyond from Lord of the Rings Commander, I believe. There's no Initiative, which is also currently not in the MTGO Vintage Cube anyway. But if you've been watching LSV's Cube videos, you should not expect creatures which have the Initiative, which for those of you who haven't Vintage Cube, those are some of the best creatures in existence in the Cube. Mm-hmm. Notable cards that are not in the Cube that you would expect to be seeing in most Vintage Cubes: Othari Sun's Glory, which is a card that powers up the red-white deck. It's a creature at the top end of that deck. City of Traitors, which is a land that taps for 2 mana, but when you use it, you have to sacrifice it.
When you play an additional land.
When you play an additional land. So you're stuck on the number of lands you have once you play City of Traitors. Thank you. Headliner Scarlet, which is a 4-drop, that's a 3/3 that makes it so things can't block. And then you essentially have the Monarch on your turn. Like, you flip the top card of your library and you can play it from exile. Oath of Druids is not in here. That's an oldie but a goodie. And really, that's not that good of a card anyway, but it's not there. Walking Ballista is out for if you manage to get tons of mana, but they've also taken out the infinite mana loops from artifact combos. And Sensei's Divining Top is also not in here, I assume, just to keep games moving along on Arena.
I bet it's clock. Well, I think the Ballista infinite mana stuff is definitely like the Arena timer thing.
Yeah.
Like, you would just time out trying to get to whatever. 40.
Oh, you would rope?
You would rope yourself by trying to like get Ballista up to 20 counters with infinite mana. Like, I wonder if that's part of it.
Maybe. But cards that are notable inclusions, which is also sweet. Booster Tutor is here, which is a card I like knew of vaguely, but was very cool seeing it cast in an LSV video for the first time. Just black for an instant that has you open up a Vintage Cube pack, so a random 15 card pack of Vintage Cube playables, and you get to draft a card from it. So supposedly is like on Demonic Tutor power level or better, which is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, you just get another shot at opening
a pack one, pick one, a piece of power or whatever.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
Golos Tireless Pilgrim is here, which is a card that hasn't been around for a long time in Vintage Cubes, but lets you search up things like Strip Mine or the Dark Depths Thespian Stage combo is in the Cube, so Golos could do some work. Comet Stellar Pup is almost assuredly going to be one of the better cards in the Cube. It's a 2-red-white Planeswalker that's very busted. Pinnacle Emissary is here. That's the new one from Edge of Eternities that power ups the artifact decks. And then double Ulamog, the Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunter, this is the 10-drop, and then the 11-drop Ulamog the Infinite Gyre is also in here. Those have been absent from most Vintage Cube lists recently.
Yeah, one of those reanimatable, one of those not, because it shuffles back in, which will be relevant when we talk about those sort of like cheating big creatures into play decks in a little bit.
And then they did take out a lot of combos, so notable combo cards that are missing. There's no Thassa's Oracle, Doomsday, Demonic Consultation, so none of that nonsense. The infinite mana is gone, so there's no Forensic Gadgeteer, no Zerto, no Basalt Monolith. There's no Chain of Smog combo, so they took out Sedgemoor Witch, Witherbloom Apprentice, Chain of Smog. I was just listening to LR, and there's no Shallow Grave or Corpse Dance because those cards, they couldn't design them in because they care about graveyard ordering and they didn't want to code that into Arena.
Oh, that's not coded. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Graveyard order mattering. And then similarly, Through the Breach couldn't get added because they didn't want to code Splice onto Arcane because Arcane's not a part of Arena.
Oh,
so Through the Breach isn't, but Sneak Attack is. So there are ways to cheat it in play, but less than usual. And then there's no Blightsteel Colossus for Tinker, but an oldie but a goodie, Sundering Titan is back in. That's a pet card of mine from Vintage Cube days of old. And then Triplicate Titan is in this list, but wasn't in the MTGO list. But that's a fairly common Cube card. Mm-hmm. Portal to Phyrexia also is not. Did you add this bullet point?
Portal to Phyrexia is in, and that's another Tinker target.
Okay. And then there's no Thopter Sword combo. So Thopter Foundry, Sword of the Meek is a way to generate a lot of infinite 1/1s that pops off with Tolarian Academy. So many combos taken out, but many combos also still in. So for example, Brain Freeze, Breach, LED is in the Cube.
Okay. So yeah, Storm is still quite supportive. Right? Quite as supported as Storm can be in the Cube, which is to say chase your 2/1s all you want.
The other things that are different compared to vintage cubes, like if you've been watching LSV's draft videos or if you've been drafting the MTGO cube, they added a lot more red one drops, and it looks like classic mono red is supported compared to the vintage cube or compared to the drafts, the cubes that LSV's play group drafts. Similarly, they added more white one drops, and like mono white is kind of supported in that cube, but it looks even more heavily supported here. And then green looks a little bit rampier. Like green looks like old green a little bit more. Like, so the current vintage cube is very much about like red green beats and like using Soul Ring or Mana Crypt or like one shot rituals to get ahead to cast busted 3 and 4 drops. But used to be green in vintage cube was about like a bunch of elves ramping you into big threats like Craterhoof Behemoth. And Craterhoof is in along with some other green ramp cards, and like Raphelos, Llanowar Emissary is a card that hasn't been in cube in forever. It's green, green 2/1 elf that taps to add a mana for each forest you control. So green looks a little rampier of old also, in addition to the red green beats deck. And one other weird omission was Kaito, Bane of Nightmares is not in, like for a blue black ninjas deck, which is very much a staple of a vintage cube archetype, but Fallen Shinobi is in. So you can still do Fallen Shinobi ninjas, but both copies of those two different cards are not there.
That's interesting, because Kaito is also such a recent card. It was in Duskmourn, like, and I'm curious why that was left off. I'll be interested to see if, because green is very much the bottom of the barrel color in vintage cube right now. I'll be interested to see if this slight shift towards it being rampier makes it more successful, because I can't
assume it will. I assume that makes it worse.
I'm skeptical. I'm like, oh, Raphelos being back and Craterhoof being back, like those can't be good cards. But
no,
we'll see.
It was very weird. I always have watched LSV's videos, and they don't value natural order highly. And I just drafted, you said the vintage cube was back up, and I drafted a red green beats deck, very good red green beats deck. But I had natural order for Atroxa. And I think I had another target too. And I was kind of like, huh, this isn't really what my deck is about. I don't think I'm going to run Natural Order Atroxa, which is odd, because that's such a powerful thing to do. And Natural Order used to be busted for green decks.
Yeah. Turn 3, Woodfall Primus, whatever, you know.
And you still can do that, but it's so at odds with what the red-green beatdown deck wants to do, which is, I think, one of green's best decks.
Yeah, for sure. So is now the time where we tap the folks who you told the next 15 minutes aren't for you? Are they tapping back in yet?
They're getting closer to tapping back in. This is more relevant. We will be explaining more, but I think this is kind of in the middle ground for experienced cubers and non-experienced cubers. I think good recommendations for both. So if you have vintage cube before, or if you haven't, ways to get up to speed is you need to watch videos on LSV's YouTube channel. Like I think that is far and away the best resource for vintage cube.
Yes, LSV puts out a daily draft video on his YouTube channel. It's usually these, you know, from this cube Discord. But sometimes he'll also just be drafting on Magic Online or whatever. And I alluded to this sort of preview pod that happened on Wednesday, or the videos started dropping on Wednesday, were of a bunch of TCG player folks. And then plus a few others from the Discord. But 5 out of the 8, I believe, people from these, promo pods made YouTube content. So you can see draft videos. And obviously, by the time this episode comes out, which will be Monday, starting on Tuesday, the YouTube scene will be flooded with vintage or Power Cube content from drafters. So you will have no shortage. But if you want to get a leg up, or you want to see it initially from very good cubers, LSV, Paul Cheon, Reed Duke, Andrea Mengucci, and Arne Hushenbeth all have YouTube videos up from these two practice drafts that they did.
But if you're new to it, you should not be trying to draft vintage cube like LSV. I think that will result in you losing more, would be my guess.
Yes, except I think I'll say yes, period. I also want to say that one of the things I appreciate so much about LSV's videos is you may not want to draft like him, but he is extremely good at letting you know which cards in the packs
are relevant,
matter, and yes, which don't. And that is a very daunting thing to get over, very daunting hump to get over. I know you have a screenshot here a little bit later. I know he's done videos like this every so often where he ranks the top 50 cards in the cube, which is all well and good, when you see a card from that list in a pack and you go, aha, I know he said Swords to Plowshares is good. I see Swords to Plowshares. I'll take it. That is 1/10 of the cards in the cube. So you're likely to not see those cards in most packs. Certainly packs you get past won't have a lot of those cards because they're being scooped up by other people. And so once you're looking at the rest of the 490 cards in the cube that aren't ranked in these top 50 lists, you can be a bit at sea to know, like, what should pull me in a direction here? What is worth pivoting into? What is worth pivoting off of? And he also, like, I think shows you more often than not how to kind of stick to your guns. Like, once he's got, like, you've talked about this before, but once he's got, like, you know, three cards that work well together, it's not like pick four. He's like, oh, but there's now there's a sneak attack and I'm going to throw away these first three picks.
He you just don't do that nearly that. As often in Vintage Cube. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so I am curious to see how all that pans out, though.
With the Arena. Data?
Well, not with the data. Get out of here with that. I could not be less interested. I also can't wait. I can't wait for people to be like, but the data says no. And like, it's got to be horrible for Vintage Cube. It's got to be terrible. But anyway, don't get me started on that.
We have good vibes going here.
That's a flag on the play.
Yeah.
10-yard penalty.
I'll take a timeout. Don't worry.
I think the thing that I am most interested about is if the Arena draft pods get flooded with inexperienced cube drafters, are you supposed to pivot more? Because LSV is drafting in pods of people who aren't letting cards in the top 50 cube list go late. And I have to assume there are going to be pods where that is happening willy-nilly on Arena if a bunch of people start trying Vintage Cube for the first time.
Yeah, drafts are going to be wild.
And then, like, you're going to get into the 5 and 6 wins bracket in best of one, and you're going to be playing against people who have, like, 4 pieces of power and just vomit their hand on turn one. It's going to be crazy.
Is this going to be good?
I was legitimately wondering about best of one. Like, once you get into the higher win tiers, like, it's going to be pretty absurd, I think. Like, well, the deck quality.
Especially it being ranked. Oh, yeah, wait. I'm not going to play best of one. I mean, I'm never going to play best of one, but
best of three is going to be where it's at.
Because it's ranked. Like, if it was unranked, I think you could get it tenable. But the fact that, like, yeah, you're just going to be, you are going to be jamming Nutter Butter deck versus Nutter Butter deck. Yeah.
Which is going to be a certain style of cube. I mean, like, there's a series where LSV faces off against his buddy Mac, who is in the cube videos, and they each pick 3 of their banger decks from the month, or like a 2-month cycle or a quarterly cycle, and they jam them off against each other. And those videos are fun to watch. Like, they're they're insanely busted decks, but the matches typically don't last very long, because it's like who gets to brain freeze breach combo off first before the other person can disrupt them with a force of will or whatever.
Yeah. So I alluded to this sort of top 50 cards list, and you've got a screenshot of it here in our show notes.
Yeah, there's 2 versions. I linked them both in our show notes. One is the most current one. I think the older one might be more relevant because there are less. The more current video is from their Power Max cube, which has stuff like Demonic Consult Oracle that is not in this. But basically, the point of this is, if you're trying to get into it, or even if you need to get up to speed on Vintage Cube, like you Vintage Cubed of old but haven't done it recently, it's a very quick way to see which cards are good. And if you pass cards from this top 50 list, you're going to be bleeding equity. But I almost think maybe it's right to sometimes. Because if you're new to Cube, like, the recommendation is to start drafting mono red, mono white, red, white, aggro. Like, that's the easiest place to start, is just forcing that deck and then seeing other decks and trying to draft decks that you lose to. But I would very much think about, if you're trying to get into Vintage Cubing, expanding your repertoire a deck at a time. Like, don't try to go in Ben Stark, draft the hard way, draft whatever deck's open. I mean, that's the way to get the most out of Vintage Cube, is to just basically never pass cards off the top 50 list, because much like Edge of Eternities, these 50 cards are wildly better than the next 100 cards, despite all of the cube being busted. And I think one of the reasons this feels so much like Vintage Cube is that the 434 cards that are the same are the cards that matter, right? Like, the 106 cards that are different are hardly ever going to be relevant in terms of dictating the decks or being good cards in the decks.
You shouted out the ones that you mentioned at the top of this segment are the ones that matter. Like, Orcish Bowmasters, One Ring, Palace Jailer, Fourth Aerolingus, like, those cards matter in the cube. and they aren't going to be here. So it's worth noting those. But yeah, most of the other ones.
And we noted the ones that are added. Like Booster Tutor is going to be great. Comet's going to be great. Correct. Pinnacle Emissary is going to be great in the Artifacts deck. But there's very few of those 106 cards that were added that are going to be relevant. So looking at these top 50 lists and just basically ignoring the cards that aren't going to be there, which you can see from what we put together in the notes and have talked about. But knowing that and trying to draft those cards as much as possible will help. So cards that are missing from the top 50 list are, again, if you're new, you can kind of check out for a little bit. Gleamox, Time Vault, White Plume Adventure, Bowmasters, Bombardiers. No, Broadside Bombardiers is in. Broadside Bombardiers is in. Seasoned Engineer is out. Demonic Consultation's out. Caves of Chaos Adventure is out. The One Ring is out. But there are going to be cards that are here, like that will move into those slots in the top 50 list, right? So knowing that Caracas is going to be insanely good from the Powered Cube, or knowing that Booster Tutor is going to be insanely good, or Sneak Attack is probably going to get in the top 50 because it's the only way to do it now. Like there's no, there's no Goryeo's Vengeance or whatever going on. Lightning Bolt is going to get back into the top 50 list. So just thinking about the cube that way and not passing busted cards is a great way to, I think, get an edge in Vintage Cube. But that also means you have to know how to draft all the decks, which is incredibly daunting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. That's why I don't like, I'm kind of sick of the advice of like draft mono red, draft mono white, draft red, white aggro as the on ramp. Cause I think there was a time where those were the best decks also. Like, so you'd be like, even if you don't get a good version of the deck, it's still going to be pretty competitive. I don't think that's the case certainly in current MTGO Vintage Cube. It may be the case in this one where they've added more of the one drops in and some of the other busted cards are out. But even so, like, I think I want to lean more into that, the advice of like, pick a deck. Learn a deck, whether that deck, and we're going to outline those decks here in a second. But like, whether you're like, I'm just going to learn Reanimator, I'm going to learn, you know, low curve disruptive, or I'm going to learn red, green ramp, mid range beats, or whatever it is. I think it's more about that than it is like start mono red, mono white, and go from there.
Well, except the hard thing is, like, let's say you're somebody who's new to Vintage Cube. You've never Vintage Cube before, and you open your pack one, pick one, and you look at the top 50 list, and the best card in the pack is Tinker. Like, and you first pick Tinker. If you don't know how to draft the Artifacts deck, Tinker's not going to be good for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, you're right. I just think, yes, if you truly have not, I would just more advise people rather than say like, just jump in and draft mono red or mono white. I would say like, just go watch some people.
Go watch videos. Yeah. First. And start to learn the decks. Yeah.
And learn the decks. And then once you feel like you have a handle on a few decks, then you can draft yourself. Or just, or just jump in and lose some gems. If that's what you want to do.
Well, if you're brand new, I think even before you go watch videos, you should study the cube list so that you don't have to read all the cards. If you're really wanting to get on board, like go on Cube Cobra. There's plenty of lists of the Arena Powered Cube. We have one linked here in the show notes. And you just need to, the same way you would study the spoiler for a new format, you need to study the Arena Cube card list and just make sure you know what all the cards do. And then start to get a sense of what the best 50 cards are from watching those top 50 videos. And LSV does a great job in his videos of not only saying why they're there, but what archetypes they go in and what you should be looking to put around them in those breakdown videos. So I think that would be step one. And then I think it would be to learn decks. And I think the easiest ones to learn are mono white, mono red, red white. Those are classic limited decks. But
yeah.
Certainly, like saying, I'm going to learn Reanimator, or I'm going to learn, and then just adding a deck to your repertoire each time. And the last one you should probably learn should be Brain Freeze Breach LED, because that can get kind of confusing. And the other thing to know, too, is that like, tutors are great, right? Demonic Tutor is great, but it's only great in combo, and it also makes your options infinitely more complicated, like every time you cast Demonic Tutor. If you're not an experienced combo player, those cards are going to be worse for you than they are somebody who's good at piloting combo.
Well, and it's also only as good as, like, Demonic Tutor is in the top 50, but it's also only as good as your best cards in your deck. And so if you don't end up with a lot of the best cards, or as you're saying, any good combos. The other thing that I'm thinking about as I look at this list is there's a lot of context that you miss. I mean, Tinker is, I think, an easy one to think about of like, okay, well, clearly I see the card Tinker. I see that it's powerful. I see it's on this list. I know in theory that what I want to do is have a cheap artifact to sacrifice and a really powerful expensive artifact to go get. What surrounds that is more mysterious, I think. It's more like, well, what does the rest of my deck look like? Other cards like Library of Alexandria is a card that is very powerful, but is as powerful as the amount of cheap stuff you have in your
deck. And specifically cheap interactive things. Like you don't want cheap threats with Library of Alexandria.
Correct. Or something like Caracas, the white land that bounces a legendary. You would like, I think it took me a long time to be like, oh, this isn't a white card. This is just a land that I could play in any deck. But it's like, it disrupts my opponent's stuff, but it's also very good for me if I'm trying to sneak out a creature and then rebuy it after I sneak it and attack with it, put it back in my hand. Like you can do stuff with it, or it's great to protect my Lurrus with, or to protect my Felio with, or things like that. Like there's a lot of stuff that isn't apparent beyond like, oh, I see this card is on this list and it's a clear archetype. The fact that Reanimate is on this list and Animate Dead, those are just good cards.
They don't have to go in Reanimator.
They're not cards that are on this list because like, well, once you draft Reanimate, you're in a Reanimate deck. It's like, no, Reanimate's just good in a deck with black sources.
But the interesting thing, and maybe it's time for another like listenership poll, is what percentage of our listening audience do you think doesn't know, like those cards we just slammed off, like Library or Tinker or, I mean, Reanimate's pretty self-explanatory in the name, but like, or Flash. Like that just don't know what those cards do or have never cast those cards or seen those cards cast. Is it 50%? Is it 25%? What's your guess?
Not all those cards are created equal, but I think it's higher than we think.
I agree.
I think it's over 50%.
You think it's over 50%? Interesting.
I don't know. So yeah, I think we've had a lot of vocal people recently who've been like, I just started drafting a year ago. Like,
right.
So there's no way. Maybe you know what Library of Alexandria does because it's like kind of famous. You probably don't know what Caracas does. You probably don't know what Flash does.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see where we need to gear our cube content towards.
And we have not helped them out at all because we haven't said
what
those cards
I know, really. That's what I was thinking. Like, do we need to be, like, we were just talking about Tinker, but we didn't say, like, two and a blue sorcery is additional cost to cast this, sacrifice an artifact, go search up an artifact.
It's hard to make cube content because you're going to alienate people when you don't say what Tinker does, and you're going to alienate people
what Tinker does, for sure. Yeah.
So we're in a really tough spot.
And I think right now we are bringing back in completely the people who are new to Cube, and this will be a good refresher for people who are experienced at Cube, which is going through broad groups of decks that exist. And these are what you should be trying to learn after you study up on the individual cards, etc.
The weather has officially turned, and even though my toddler refuses to wear coats and dress appropriately, like it or not, it is definitely fall.
Just because the weather is changing doesn't mean you have to pack away the fun. Chubby's fall collection just dropped, and it's packed with cozy gear that will have you running hotter than a trophy streak in Vintage Cube.
I was so excited to be able to talk about Chubbies again, because we got our hands on some shorts this summer, which we rocked at MagicCon Vegas. And my new Chubbies swimsuit has surpassed the summer with trips to various hot tubs, but they've also got great products for all seasons.
There's the new Comfort Collection featuring the Everywhere Jogger. It's the perfect pant for impromptu naps, weekend errands, and everything in between.
Whether you're layering up for tailgates, lounging through lazy Sundays, or just leaning fully into fall comfort, Chubbies has you covered. For a limited time, Chubbies is giving our listeners 20% off your order with the code LOL at chubbiesshorts.com/LOL.
That's code LOL at chubbiesshorts.com/LOL. Support the show and show your thighs some respect with Chubbies.
Okay.
So the aggro decks, most classic, are mono white, which is going to be supported, mono red, which is going to be supported. Red-white aggro is the most current iteration of aggro in like the true Vintage Cube decks, like the decks that LSV's playgroup plays with. Red-white aggro is way more common than red and white because there are so many good red-white gold cards that have been printed recently.
And so much fewer one-drops in the Vintage Cube. And that's one of the issues with like for a long time, mono white and mono red were much preferred over a combo of them because you just need your mana needed to be so good so you could cast one drops of each color on turn one when you wanted to, or double spell with them on turn two. Now there's just not a lot of one drops, and the red white deck, it's still aggressive, but like, you know, you're jamming Goblin Bombardment and Ajani, the Flip Planeswalker, that kind of combo stuff.
And then Red-Green Beatdown, I think, would be the fourth one I would put there. And all of those decks basically want to accelerate out powerful 3 and 4 drop threats at the cost of card advantage. So you want to run Chrome Moxes, you want to run Mox Diamonds, you want to run Lotus Petal, you want to run Simeon Spirit Guide, like things that just get you a turn ahead so you can get your threat down a turn earlier, because the threats are good enough now, they can carry a game at the cost of card disadvantage, and that didn't used to be the case. Mono red, mono white, I assume will want to just curve out a little more normally, but certainly red, white, and red, green want to rush out those busted 3 and 4 drops.
Yeah, it's so funny that like red, green beats is kind of that archetype from like, remember the modern cube, like just elves on one and then 3 drops and 4 drops and 5 drops with haste to turn sooner.
Red, green Garbo, baby.
Yeah, it's quite good, actually. The next one we talked about is Green Ramp, which we're pretty skeptical of this holding up, but it does appear that it's seeded or supported with the addition of Raphelos and Craterhoof. And these decks really, like, the curve, it's like the opposite of a normal curve, where, like, what you want your deck to look like is, like, all one mana elf dork accelerators and all, whatever, 6 drops, 7 drops, like, you're not trying to do mid-rangey stuff if this is what the deck was like of old. Like, it used to be like elf on one, cultivate on two, you know, 6 drop on 3 type deal.
Primeval Titan on 3, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very skeptical of Green Ramp being good or holding up at all in a competitive environment.
Yes.
Reanimator, which is basically you want things that discard cards, you want your reanimates, your animate deads, necromancies, things of that ilk, and large monsters like Atraxa, Itali.
Archon of Cruelty.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, I was blanking on the rest of them. Torsten.
Mm-hmm. And then in conjunction with that is, so those are ways to cheat creatures in from your graveyard. There are also other ways to cheat creatures in, namely Sneak Attack, which is a red enchantment that, you know, lets you haste something out for a single red mana and then sacrifice it. Flash, which you just want to make sure you have the thing with an ETB or a leave the battlefield, but, you know, just comes into play and then it immediately goes away unless you pay its mana cost that's 2 less. And Show and Tell, which is each person gets to put, I think it's what, artifact, creature, enchantment, or land from their hand into play.
Yeah, but just don't play Show and Tell. Show and Tell always goes wrong.
And then Natural Order, which we talked about earlier, which is basically tinker for green creatures, sack a green creature, and then go search up a green creature. And there's also Channel plus big Eldrazi or artifacts,
which looks like it's going to be more supported here than it has been in the vintage cubes of old. I do still think Channel's good. We had just joked about, like, I still feel a twinge of whatever when I see Channel. I'm excited that Channel looks better than it has been in vintage cubes, because it's still there, but it just goes woefully late.
I just put this note here that knowing the overlap here in terms of which large monsters work with which cheap ways to get creatures into play is important for the overlap. Like, there's a famous one, like World Spine Worm is an 11 mana 15/15 that when it dies, you make 3 5/5 tokens. That is incredible with Flash. That's the best thing to flash in. Pay 2 mana, flash in World Spine, immediately sacrifice it, get your 3 5/5s. The problem with World Spine Worm is that it has the shuffle it back in text. So when it hits your graveyard, you shuffle it back in. If you have an instant speed way to reanimate it,
which aren't going to be in this cube,
except necromancy,
instant
speed. But yeah, you know, normally you could Corpse Dance, or you could Shallow Grave back one of those shuffle creatures like World Spine or Emrakul. You can't do that here, but it's just important to note, like, okay, World Spine Worm, incredible to flash in. Atraxa, okay to flash in. Like, you get the cards, you don't get the body. Really good to sneak in because you get the cards, plus you get to, you know, drain them for 7 effectively. Really good to Natural Order in. You just, like, you want to know, like, which of the things, basically the main difference being, do they shuffle themselves back in or not?
Correct. And like Natural Order is really good with Atraxa, and Vaultborn Tyrant is also another really good one to get with that. Yeah, knowing which go with which, for sure. And it is not intuitive, but you'll quickly, if you, I really don't think it's actually, like, if you're a good drafter, if you would consider yourself competent, which I hope you would if you're listening to this podcast, I think if you study the list and learn the cards and then watch, like, 10 videos or something, which sounds like a lot of homework before Tuesday.
But if you watch them like Ben and you only watch the draft and don't watch any gameplay,
you really don't need to watch the gameplay, though, like, because LSV explains what's what. And then you'll figure the gameplay out as you're doing it on Arena. There's going to be so many people roping because they're not going to know what cards do. People play so slow even on MTGO these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's going to be that hard to get medium close to up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
The rub is that it's like coming to a flashback format, never having played it. Like, whatever. I don't know what percentage of the player base on Arena. I would bet, I don't know, at least 25% of the people who are cubing are going to be highly experienced cubers, and you're going to be coming to it from a brand new perspective. You think way down from that?
That number is going to be way lower.
I think now's the time to get in, for sure.
The overlap of people who have, like, vintage cubed a ton and the player base on Arena that's going to be playing this is so small.
So small, huh? Yeah, maybe that's true. That's even more reason to get on board now.
I agree.
Next archetype is blue-red or Jeskai artifacts. And basically the recipes here are tons of small, cheap, trinkety artifacts. Draw sevens are really good because your cheap, trinkety artifacts frequently produce a lot of fast mana. Mm-hmm. And so that's a way for you to refuel back up on cards. Those draw sevens are going to be called wheels after Wheel of Fortune or Time Twister, that sort of thing. And then Urza is a great creature here. It's 2 blue-blue for a 1/4 that makes
a Karn construct,
which has power and toughness equal to the number of artifacts you control. And then you can tap your artifacts to add a blue, and you can also pay 5 to reveal the top card of your deck and play it, like a Mind's Desire type effect. Balance is great here, which is one of our pet cards, which is 1 and a white. Each creature evens up creatures,
lands
and cards in hand. And then notably, it doesn't count artifacts. So you can dump cards out of your hand onto the battlefield that are artifacts, and then your opponent has to sacrifice a bunch of creatures and discard a bunch of cards. It's a great way to abuse that card. Tinker, which we've already mentioned. Upheaval's another one, which is 4 blue-blue for a sorcery, and each player returns all permanents back to their hand. But the idea with that is that you generate way more than 6 mana, and then you cast your upheaval with mana floating and can redeploy your board quickly while your opponent is forced to do it, you know, basically from the start of the game. So that's a pet deck of mine, LSV's. You will quickly see how to draft artifacts if you watch LSV's YouTube channel.
A pet deck of mine is also in the cube, which is just like low curve blue red with a lot of like looting or rummaging synergy. That comes with like Dragon Rage Channeler, getting you Delirium, Avora, which is a 1 and a red, 1/1 that makes a blood. There's Prophet's Eidetic Memory, Fear of Missing Out. Malcolm as a 2/1 flash flyer that loots when it connects, Ledger Shredder that loots when you double spell or connives when you double spell. You can get a lot of synergy there, and then you're fueling your graveyard for Treasure Cruise or your Detective's Phoenix, whatever stuff like that. Blue Reds.
I would say, would you agree with the assessment that that is a no?
Okay. I'm rolling my eyes so hard because I already know the question you're asking, and it's just such an annoying question, but go ahead and ask it.
No, I retract my question.
Go ahead.
I feel scared about what's going
to happen. It's fine. I'll answer it honestly.
My question is: this is a tier 2 deck. Would you agree with that?
Great. Are you telling me we're only talking about tier 1 decks on this list? You only put tier 1 decks to talk about here.
And I
added the only tier 2 deck. No, did you want to shout out the other tier 2 decks that are on this list, or did you only want to make me feel bad about the tier 2 deck I wanted to talk about? No. I'm just trying to just clarify for our listeners' sake. I'm trying to clarify.
So I wanted to retract this question. Things got hostile quickly.
I think I handled myself quite appropriately. What's up next on the list of tier 1 decks?
Combo Control is up next, which this is, I think, if you are in the process of learning decks, this is one of the ones I would add last to your repertoire, because lots of the cards in Combo Control do stone nothing. Like, LSV is a great pilot of this archetype, and you can just see, like, some drafts he just loses because his deck does nothing. But also what he's capable of that your average person, me included, is not capable of is finding lines that win out of nowhere. He's one of the best in the business at quickly finding those lines. And so basically Combo Control is, it's a disruptive deck that plans to win in one turn with a combo, the most iconic being Brain Freeze, Underworld Breach, LED. And the plan there is that you Brain Freeze yourself after casting Underworld Breach. So Brain Freeze is a card that mills you with Storm, three cards for each Storm copy. Underworld Breach lets you cast cards out of the graveyard for their mana cost by also exiling three cards from your graveyard, which Brain Freeze conveniently fuels. And then LED operates as your Black Lotus that you keep casting over and over to get your Storm count higher. And then once your Storm count is high enough, you Brain Freeze your opponent to mill them out and win via decking them after milling your own deck to fuel your Underworld Breach. It is going to be slightly spicier that there's another Shuffle Eldrazi in here, because usually it's only Emrakul, right?
Oh, in terms of being able to battle against
this deck. But there are also ways to do it enough that you still can Brain Freeze enough times to, like, hopefully hit it to where it actually, I don't really know how all that stuff works. LSV is really good at figuring that stuff out. I'm going to stop talking about it. That's what I'm saying. Like, this should be the last deck that you learn. And I will probably be trying to do this more than I would on MTGO, because I assume the competition is going to be a little softer. But another good combo control deck, which is easier to do, is draw sevens and draw seven punishers. So cards like Hull Breacher, which is 2 and a blue for a 3/2, that if your opponent would draw instead, they draw no cards and you get a treasure. Or things like Shieldred, which, like, every time you draw, you gain 2. Every time your opponent draws, they lose 2. Orcish Bowmasters is not going to be here, which is worth noting, so that you're down 1, draw 7 Punisher. And in these types of combo control decks, that's where cards like Vampiric Tutor or Demonic Tutor or things like that really shine.
Well, and also specifically with those tutors that that aren't Demonic Tutor, Vampiric and Mystical, that put the cards on top, you make up for that. Like, that's, you're down a card, but then you make up for that when you're tutoring up your draw 7.
Correct. I also would like to back up to the tier 2 deck discussion.
Yes, sir.
My thoughts have crystallized now that I'm not feeling attacked.
This is victim.
I was doing
you're
the attacking.
The victim. Okay. Yes,
which
sir.
Which is that of, I agree that we have shouted out non-tier 1 archetypes. I think the difference is those cards you listed are the first cards I would say are cards that don't matter. In packs, like, you're very good at making decks with cards that are classically considered, like, LSV would look at a pack and say he does like some of those cards, but most of those cards would be in the don't matter in the Vintage Cube card list. I think that is what I was trying to get at.
Sure. Other than the, like, aggro decks you shouted up, but this is also an aggro deck, so I just think it's like the aggro decks don't have a lot of the top 50 cards.
I agree, but we haven't shouted out individual cards is the difference. That's, sure. I think that is what I was trying to get at, rather than that this is a tier 2 deck, that those are the cards you listed are cards that typically don't matter.
Sure, I agree with that.
That was the point I was trying to make.
Yes, Herd Chef. Appreciate it. Lands combo is up next, which is also, I think, very much a tier 2 deck. It's,
yes, for sure. This is definitely a tier 2 deck that we are going to name.
Tier 3, maybe. But the idea here is you're putting together ways to play multiple lands in a turn, whether that's from Fast Bond or Exploration, ways to be able to play lands from your graveyard, whether that's Crucible of Worlds or Renin 6, or I'm forgetting the stupid room card from Duskmourn, but there's a room card that lets you do it. And then ways to abuse that, whether it's you've got Strip Mine and Wasteland to blow up your opponent's lands, you've got Zurn Orb to gain infinite life with Fast Bond, you've got Titania to make a bunch of 5/3s. There's also a 2-land combo with Dark Depths and Thespian Stage, or it could be Dark Depths and what's it, Vampire Hexmage.
Yeah.
But like just wait. Dark Depths is the land that once comes in with 20 counters, and once all the counters are gone, you get a 20/20 flying indestructible token. Thespian Stage lets you copy Dark Depths, so then it's just that copy without those counters, so you immediately get that creature. It's kind of glass cannony. There's just a lot of egg. It's really rough playing that against a white deck that's like, cool, I have
Swords of Plowshares, yeah.
Swords, Solitude, Path to Exile, whatever. Like, I have tons of ways to exile.
That's why Swords of Plowshares is so good, for example, which why that's on the top 50 list. Swords of Plowshares is white, instant, exile target creature. Its controller gains life equal to its toughness. So frequently, you're exchanging one card and one mana for something that your opponent has invested multiple cards into getting onto the battlefield.
I've cast Entomb, I've tutored up something, my reanimate, I've reanimated Grizzlebrand, and you're like, okay, swords. I mean, that's a bad example, I guess, because it gets to draw seven anyway.
Seven cards, yeah.
But the point still stands.
Yeah. And the last category of decks, and there are way more decks than just these, but these are some heavy hitters, is Disruption decks, which are some of my favorite decks in the format, which are targeted discard like Thoughtseize or Duress, that sort of thing, and counter spells backed up by cheap threats or good threats, like kind of like combo control, but instead of combo control, you're disruptive control, where like you've got threats that are trying to clock your opponent instead of comboing off in one turn, plus the discard of the counter spells to keep them off balance. And I think if you don't have power, like the power nine, I think the disruptive decks are some of the best decks you can draft outside of just aggro decks. It's a way to compete without having power because so many of your cards and your curve are shoved so low, which is why Soul Ring is always terrible for me because I always default to these decks if I don't start with power.
Yeah, because you're just playing a bunch of one and two drops that don't have colorless mana in them.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, should we get in some pack one, pick ones real quick?
Sure. Yeah,
or a pack one, pick one. We'll see how long they
I think. I think best to do here is to say every card, read what every card does, and after each card, maybe talk about like where we like it or how highly we would expect to pick it or how flexible, whatever things spring to mind about the card.
Sure. Okay, going from top left corner through the pack, we've got Craterhoof Behemoth, 5GGG for a 5/5 haste. Whenever it enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. This is like the green ramp strategy we talked about. You're going to want elves, you're going to want green ramp cards, finish the game off with a Craterhoof Behemoth. I expect this card to not be a high pick and not be very good.
Yep. Draconautics Engineer is up next. One in a red, 2/2 with exhaust. Two exhausts, actually. Single red, other creatures you control gain haste until end of turn, put a counter on this creature, or exhaust three in a red, make a 4/4 red dino dragon creature token with flying. This is what it looks like. It's just an aggro red card. There's not
but
like
it's, any... But it's not good, right? Like, you would not never good. Pick this highly. It's never going to... you would hope that it doesn't make the cut, I think, often in your decks.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Nexus of Becoming is up next. This is 6 mana for an artifact. At the beginning of combat on your turn, draw a card. Then you may exile an artifact or creature card from your hand. If you do, create a token that's a copy of the exiled card, except it's a 3/3 golem artifact creature in addition to its other types. This is, again, generally not great. This is another cheat card for things like Emrakul or Atraxa or whatever. The problem is it's so expensive, so you also have to kind of combine it with artifact ramp, and then you're getting into a mishmash of a bunch of different archetypes. I think generally Nexus of Becoming is not a high pick and not a great card.
Top 50 alert, Fable of the Mirror Breaker is here. I don't think I need to read the wall of text that is this card. I think everybody knows what Fable of the Mirror Breaker does. This is an excellent card. It is on the top 50 list from LSV. And even if I didn't have that knowledge, even if the LSV data, it's funny. That you hate data, but you love the top. You love the top 50 list.
But the data isn't gonna say the same thing as the top 50 list.
Okay, I was quite calm.
the data's gonna say, I'm sure that Underworld Breach is horrible or whatever. I am curious to see if the data like can handle that. I assume not, because Vintage Cube is probably the most context dependent format of all time, but yeah, I'm sure Sirkovitz will tell us.
There's also demerits for me for bringing it up twice now. Okay, but Fable of the Mirror Breaker is an excellent card. Like, I don't even think one of the reasons it's so excellent, it's just intrinsically powerful, and it goes in such a... Some of the cards that are on the top 50 list are very narrow, like Flash is on the list, but Flash is only good, the number of... Do you have World Spine Worm in your deck, you know? Like, sometimes you draft Flash and you don't play it. you're like going to play Fable of the Mirror Breaker like 98% of the time that you draft it. Like, it's splashable. It's good in Boros aggro. It's good in mono red aggro. It's good in red green beats ramp. It's good in blue red artifacts because the 2/2 makes treasure. It's good in my blue red looting cycling deck because chapter 2 lets you draw 2, discard 2. Like, it's just good everywhere.
Yeah, and I think it is the only defensible pack one, pick one out of this pack, if you're trying to optimize, which is weird, because you were talking about like Vintage Cube's in a place where it's solved, and I do think that is true for Vintage Cube. I think you are supposed to pack one, pick one, Fable the Mirror Breaker here, and if you don't, you're giving up win percentage.
It's solved in this sense. Like, it's solved in the sense of, like, when there are power outliers here. Like, if there's a Swords to Plowshares and a Fable of the Mirror Breaker in the
then
pack,
then you have, like, options, yeah.
And you have a choice. Like, so it's not saying that it's solved inherently, and I'm not saying that once you take Fable of the Mirror Breaker, it's solved. But
yeah.
In this specific thing, there are just clear... I think Edge of Eternities is actually a pretty good comp of, like, there's just clear gaps in power level.
Power level, yeah.
And so, yes, Fable of the Mirror Breaker is that card here.
Tribal Flames is up next. This is one red for a sorcery, deals X damage to any target, where X is the number of basic land types among lands you control. Again, this is a last pickable card. Like, even if you draft Domain, you don't care if you end up with a Tribal Flames. And Domain is a deck in the Vintage Cube, like Domain beats, but Tribal Flames is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Aether Spellbomb is a single mana artifact. You can pay blue, sack it to return a creature to its owner's hand, or pay one, sack it to draw a card. There's a lot of different, like, it's trinkety, you're never picking it early, but there's a lot of applications for it in artifact decks. It's nice to just, sometimes your cheap artifacts that you deploy before you play a draw 7 are mana accelerants, and that's nice. Sometimes they're just things that sit on the battlefield that you can use later, like their spell bombs or their Urza's Bauble or whatever, or Mishra's Bauble. And you just let them sit and you're still like gaining card advantage because they're hanging out. I'll draw 7 and then I can activate those artifacts.
I will say one thing that just occurred to me looking at this pack is there's a lot of duds here. Like, a lot of cards we've said don't matter at all. And I think that is more true than not on the Arena Powered Cube. So if you're used to watching LSV's videos, which I've watched religiously for a year and a half now, they play with a very powered cube. And then going from that to the MTGO cube, if you draft the MTGO cube, you're like, man, there's a lot of packs with a lot of bad cards. I think that is even more true on Arena. You're going to see a lot more packs where, like, man, there are a lot of bad cards in these packs if you're an experienced cuber. And you need to make sure that you pick the cards that matter. Like, I remember watching Paul's draft, first YouTube video of the powered cube, and Paul's packs were atrocious, like, in Paul's defense. Like, he saw atrocious packs, but what Paul didn't do was give himself outs to get into a deck by taking things like Torsten or, like, some of the big boom booms without sneak. Paul was like, well, I don't want to draft these cards without, you know, having sneak or without having a way to cheat them into play, which is, like, generally true, but Paul was taking cards that didn't matter at all over those cards that could matter. Mm-hmm. In my opinion. And, like, in defense, the packs were atrocious. But I think if you can try to find the spot where you're giving yourself out to hit one of these archetypes or powerful decks, I think that is good to do as well, especially cube packs that are pretty bad like this. Mm-hmm. Enduring Innocence is up next. This is one white for 2/1 lifelink. Whenever one or more creatures power 2 or less enter, draw a card. When it dies, it turns into an enchantment. This card's extremely good in mono white or red white aggro and does matter.
Next, we've got Caustic Bronco, one and a black for a 2/2. It has Saddle 3. When it attacks, you reveal the top card of your library, put it into your hand. You lose life equal to that card's mana value unless Caustic Bronco was saddled, or if it isn't saddled, then otherwise each opponent loses that much life. This is sort of like a Dark Confidant impression, but it's just good in those low curve disruptive decks. It's cheap. It has the potential to be a card advantage engine for you. I don't think it's often, like, you can do some wombo combo stuff where you're like Vampiric Tutor for Emrakul, saddle, attack with this, reveal it, dome for 15. But I think it's more so about just like being a cheap card advantage engine.
Yeah. Cryptic Command is up next. One blue, blue, blue for an instant. Choose 2, counterspell, bounce a thing, tap all creatures your opponents control and draw a card. This card's very good. It matters, but you don't pick it early because it's so restricting from your mana base. You have to be heavy blue before Cryptic is a good card.
I think Cryptic is a little worse than you're giving it credit for. Maybe it's going to be better in this version because of what you're saying of like the power, like there's going to be a lot, it's a little clunkier of a cube. I think Cryptic Command is kind of washed in the way that I also feel like Mana Drain is kind of washed. Like they're, I've said this to you, this should not be surprising to you, but like Mana Drain was great when everything that mattered was 4 or 5 mana. Everything that matters is 1 or 2 mana now.
Yeah. Like, Mana Drain's still a very good card.
It's it's still powerful. It still matters, but I think it's a little washed. Thirst for Discovery, 2 and a blue, instant, draw 3, then discard 2 cards unless you discard a basic land card. Card does not matter at all.
Badlands is up next. Lands are insanely good in cube.
We haven't talked about lands this episode, really.
No. Fetch lands are extremely high picks. They're on the top 50 list. Followed by the fetch lands, the OG duels like Badlands, etc., are on like next in line of lands you'd want to draft, followed probably by Triomes, followed by the Surveil lands. Actually, so it would be fetches, OG duels, shocks, Triomes, Surveils. That's like the power rankings for lands. But lands are really good, and they let you like mix and match and splash powerful cards. They let you splash cards from the top 50 list. Like being blue black and getting to splash Swords of Plowshares for free is big game in your blue black deck. And lands let you do that. So they're extraordinarily high picks. They let you play more of the cards you drafted. They're really important. I think out of this pack, I think my pick order would probably go Badlands, at least in the top 5, maybe the top 3 from this pack.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's right. Thraben Inspector is up next. Single white, 1/2. When it enters, you get a clue. I don't even know how good this is for... It's not that good, right?
It's not good, no. You'll play it in blue-white artifacts, maybe, but it makes balance awkward.
Yeah.
And it's not that aggressive for white weenie. It's in a weird spot.
One mana, 1/2. Yeah, okay.
Inti is up next. Inti, Seneschal of the Sun, 1 and a red for a 2/2. Whenever you attack, you can discard a card. When you do, put a +1/+1 counter on target attacking creature, gains trample until end of turn. And whenever you discard one or more cards, exile the top card of your library. You can play that card until your next turn. This is a great threat. It's very good in a red-white deck. Its best home is probably like a red-black mid-range deck with a reanimator component. That's a red-black mid-range disruptive deck is kind of a classic archetype, and Inti really shines there. But this card matters. It's on the less powerful end of cards that matter. Like it doesn't crack into the top 50 cards, but it probably cracks the top 100 cards would be my guess, or top 150.
Top 150. Yeah. I could buy that. Very, very good in my blue red draw discard deck. Cause it just turns all your discard into potentially draw a card as well. Yogwill, 2 and a black sorcery. Until end of turn, you may play cards in your graveyard as though they were in your hand. Cards put into your graveyard this turn are removed from the game instead. It's a key piece to the Storm combo deck. You either need this or Underworld Breach when you're Storm comboing off to be able to rebuy the things from your graveyard. And the
things being rituals, like you need cards that generate mana.
Right. So you need... I mean, Black Lotus, obviously great. Lion's Eye Diamond. And just if you've never played with Lion's Eye Diamond before.
Safety tips.
Safety tips. Lion's Eye Diamond. I mean, certainly safety tips for Arena. You're going to have to do some full control because Lion's Eye Diamond is a 0 mana artifact. You sacrifice it and discard your hand to add 3 mana. So you cannot. You can't just cast Yogwill with this. Okay. So what you need to do, and if you're like casting Yogwill, the play with this is you're casting Yogwill with Yogwill on the stack, sacrifice LED.
To add mana.
So it adds mana, and then your hand is empty. But then also importantly, it's in the graveyard.
Before Yogwill resolves.
Before Yogwill resolves, so that it's there for you to then have it be the first thing you cast post Yogwill. So you get to then get the mana free. But
sounds like somebody who has tried to crack LED to cast Yogwill before. I've been very sad when it ended up in his graveyard.
Well, it's that, but it's also the times where I'm like, just like tank, trying to.
Do I have enough mana?
Figuring out the Storm combo off, and like every time going through the loop and tricking myself to like, oh yes, because I can use the LED mana to cast Yogwill. No, I can't do that. Dang it.
So stressful piloting those decks on stream.
I can't. I mean, like,
I think that is when I feel dumbest as a human being, is when I'm trying to pilot a combo deck from Vintage Cube on stream. And LSV makes it so effortless on his YouTube videos.
The rope is going to really make that tough.
Yeah.
Buyer beware.
Lastly is Wandering Emperor, 2WW for a 3/3 flash planeswalker. You can activate the abilities when you flash it in, put a +1/+1 counter on a creature, it gains first strike until end of turn. You can -1 to make a 2/2 white knight token with Vigi, and you can -2 to exile target tapped creature and gain 2 life. This card is whatever. You'll play it in your white decks, not a high pick.
And more specific, but again, not a good white aggro card.
Yeah, it's fine. You'd maybe play it at the top end of your white aggro deck. It's not an ideal 4-drop there, but...
I mean, like, yeah, I feel like I look at it, I'm like, I want this in, what, my blue-white control deck?
Maybe. You don't really care about it anywhere. You won't miss it. You'll play it, but you won't miss it, is how I would categorize Wandering Emperor.
So what do you rank the cards in this pack? Fable 1...
Fable 1, I think... Inti 2? Inti 2.
Badlands 3?
I think Enduring Innocence is better than Badlands. Badlands isn't that in demand of a dual land.
Sure.
Enduring Innocence is really good for the white aggro decks to keep the gas flowing. And then I think Badlands 4, probably. Okay. Something like that.
It's a pretty weak pack, but just gives a good sense of just talking through cards, where we expect things. And for the folks who are extremely new to Cube, this is the relevant thing. Is like, I feel like the most overwhelming thing about Cube is all these cards are either bangers from their original formats or cards that, like, we don't like. Aether Spellbomb, I feel like you look at and you're like, what is this doing here? Like, is this good? But honestly, it's more of a role player than something like Draconautix Engineer is.
Yes.
Where you'd be like, well, Draconautix Engineer was just really good in Limited, so it's probably going to be really good in Cube. It's like, no. It's not, it doesn't really matter here. And Aether Spellbomb actually has some applications.
The Vintage Cube is the ultimate draft decks, not cards, but it's weird in that, like, you start by drafting really good cards and then you have to draft a deck.
Yeah.
But Draconautix Engineer is not a really good card, because if everything's powerful, or if everything's super, nothing is, and everything is super in Vintage Cube.
For sure.
To quote The Incredibles. And on that note, I think great place to wrap us up, unless you've got anything to add.
No. I'm good. Go forth in Cube. We're very excited. You can better believe we're going to be cubing to our heart's content until Avatar drops in a few weeks.
For sure. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our tier lists, which I think will be up and running again once Avatar drops, our YouTube channel.
Maybe get that powered Cube tier list going.
Oh boy, are you going to do that?
No chance.
Okay. Our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our Patreon, all of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.